This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
This is Eric Michaels, and you have tuned into the eHealth Radio Network and the Vascular Disease Information Channel. Make sure you connect with us on Facebook to receive the latest programming for your convenience simply at eHealth Radio. Today we are visiting with Dr. Frank J. Veith, Professor of Surgery and the William J. von Liebig Chair in Vascular Surgery at the Cleveland Clinic and Professor of Surgery at New York University Medical Center. Dr. Veith pioneered work in experimental and clinical lung transplantation in the 1970s and 1980s. Dr. Veith's attention turned toward vascular surgery with an emphasis on lower extremity revascularization procedures. He and his colleagues were the first to advocate an aggressive approach to saving limbs threatened by hardened arteries and gangrene when most patients with this problem were being treated by a major amputation. In the late 1980s and early 1990s, Dr. Veith became increasingly involved with endovascular treatments. He and his group were the first to perform an endovascular graft repair of an abdominal aortic aneurysm, or EVAR, in the United States. They also were the first in the world to perform an EVAR for a ruptured abdominal aneurysm. Dr. Veith is the chairman of the Veith Symposium, the largest medical symposium in the world, attended by vascular surgeons and interventionalists. Veith Symposium is now in its 39th year in New York City. Certainly a privilege and honor to have you on the show today, Dr. Veith.
It's nice to be here, Eric.
Well, for our listening audience, what is the role of a vascular surgeon?
Well, vascular surgeons really are the only or the main specialty that deals with all elements of vascular disease, that is, disease of blood vessels, mainly arteries, but also veins. And the vascular surgeon, the well-trained vascular surgeon, and most are, by virtue of their boards and training, are the guys that are supposed to deal with conservative treatment, that is basically reassurance and no treatment, with drug treatment for vascular diseases. And then when necessary, they are the ones who we feel are best qualified to perform the open surgical procedures that are needed, or the endovascular, that is within the lumen of blood vessels, the endovascular treatments that are largely replacing open surgery today.
What are the types of diseases and conditions vascular surgeons typically treat?
Well, we treat all sorts, and there's just a myriad of different vascular diseases that involve the arteries and veins. But primarily, the challenging and commonest disease that we most challenging and commonest disease that we treat are one variety or another of arteriosclerosis, or hardening of the arteries.
What is new and on the horizon in the field of vascular surgery? I know we've advanced and come a long way over the years.
Well, there, since we're going to be talking a little bit about our meeting in November, the Veith Symposium, that's a very complex question. There's lots of new things on the horizon, and really the thing that makes our meeting successful is we present various opinions about everything that's new, and we have actually 750 talks in the meeting. But in general, the most exciting areas right now are better, newer, more effective endovascular treatments, that is, treatments from inside the blood vessel for a variety of lesions around the body. There are many, many new devices and techniques for using these devices, which are appearing every day, and studies that evaluate them. And then there's a lot of excitement about newer, particularly endovascular treatment of venous disease, not just varicose veins, but diseases of veins that previously were somewhat ignored, but we're now developing new and better treatments for that. And then there are a variety of controversial issues which are going to be addressed at our meeting, whether or not endovascular treatment for multiple sclerosis is effective. There are many, many new endovascular and really exciting, clever endovascular treatments for blocked arteries below the groin, that is in the lower extremity, and there are a variety of new and better devices for treating all sorts of other varieties of arteriosclerosis and what we call aneurysms, which are ballooned out dilatations of arteries. And most of these now, or at least the vast majority, we're developing good endovascular approaches so that big operations can be lessened and replaced by the less invasive endovascular ones.
You've had an enormous career traveling globally, lecturing to many vascular surgeons and specialists, especially in developing countries, giving them your time, energy, and opinions relative to how vascular procedures should or should not be done. Do you care to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, I do travel a lot in conjunction with basically recruiting for our meeting. And even though I do try to dispense some knowledge to these out-of-U.S. countries, it's really remarkable and rather shocking that many, many new developments are actually being produced outside the U.S. There are a variety of reasons for this, the FDA being only one of them. But everywhere I go, Brazil, all over Europe, Australia, even China and Russia, just to mention a few, all over South America, I always learn something or see something that's new and different. And, of course, my goal is to bring that back to our meeting in the United States, which is really an international meeting. But even though many physicians and lay people feel that most advances in medicine are being done first in the United States, that's really not true. Some of the developments that are most exciting occurred first in Argentina and Brazil, Australia, and as I say, even Russia and China. Everywhere I go, I learn something that is advantageous to our American audience when the person introducing that new technique talks about it at our meeting.
What was the inspiration and motivation that engaged you to develop and write a vascular surgery program known as V-Symposium, now in its 39th year, where you have served as chairman of the largest international vascular surgery program in the world?
Well, it's interesting. Like everything else, small businesses start small. Our meeting was originally a small local meeting attended by a couple of hundred people at the most in New York City. And over the years, I guess because it's met an unfilled need, and we can talk about what that need might have been, our meeting has now grown to being the largest vascular meeting in the world. And last year we had more than 4,000 attendees, including vascular surgeons, interventional radiologists, interventional cardiologists, and even other specialists who were in vascular medicine, for example, who were comprised both the faculty and the audience. And so, as I say, like small businesses everywhere, some of them grow because there's a big need for it. And fortunately, I guess we did some things right, and our meeting fulfilled a need and became much bigger.
Absolutely tremendous. Today we are with Dr. Frank J. Veith, Professor of Surgery and the William J. Von Liebig Chair in Vascular Surgery at the Cleveland Clinic and Professor of Surgery at New York University Medical Center, here on eHealth Radio's Vascular Disease Information Channel, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Dr. Veith, how does a program like the Veith Symposium benefit its attendees, and who exactly should attend this meeting?
Well, we think that our meeting is valuable for all vascular specialists, and I mentioned who they were. They're in a variety of different specialties, and anybody with an interest in vascular disease, because it provides an overview of the most advanced information, which really comprises the entire spectrum of how vascular disease should be managed. It basically, we think, and I guess our audience thinks, is the best way of getting informed about what's going on and what new developments have occurred anywhere in the world relating to this specialty area. One can get information from textbooks, but it's often 5 years or 6 years out of date. It may even be biased. One can get information from journals, journal articles, but again, they're out of date by the time they're published for a variety of good and not so good reasons. But if one goes to our meeting or attends our meeting, they get the best overview of current advances in the field, and they also are exposed to more than one opinion, so that we tend to look at both sides of a controversial issue and even have a number of debates, so the audience can make up their mind what's known, what's not known, and use that information to best treat their patients. So we think that our meeting, and it's designed to do this, provides as good a overview of what's going on in the world. And for that reason, we not only have the presentations, which are short and telegraphic in themselves, by experts in the field, by world authorities, but we also record the entire meeting so it can serve as a reference source or a textbook for those who want to view it after the meeting.
How does this symposium benefit the public?
Well, obviously, well-informed doctors provide the best treatment, and we think those who come to our meeting have the opportunity to be as well-informed as they possibly can be. So we think this is an enormous help to the public, in that the doctors that attend are sufficiently well-informed that they will apply the treatments appropriately when they're indicated, avoid them when they're not indicated, and not be practicing medicine that's several years old.
What are your biggest concerns today regarding vascular surgery, in particular having to do with unnecessary procedures? Will you be addressing this at this year's VEITH Symposium?
Absolutely. That's an area that's always been of great interest to me. And throughout my career, I've seen various examples, both by vascular surgeons, but predominantly by other vascular specialists who practice vascular disease treatment as a hobby, as it were. Examples of patients who are being treated for things that are best not treated. And, of course, our meeting addresses that. It's a real problem, particularly since cardiologists or those most skilled in dealing with the heart, that's what cardiology means, are trying to get into the vascular field because it's an area of opportunity. And every day I see patients that are treated that I believe would best be treated conservatively, that is medically, or not treated interventionally. But we see it all the time. And why this goes, maybe it's ignorance. I suspect it's not. Maybe it's the fact that the physicians doing it want the money or the ego gratification, whatever. There's a lot of treatment going on out there, particularly in vascular disease treatment, a lot of treatment going on that probably shouldn't be done. And the patients don't know this, and sometimes the doctors don't know it. Our meeting does tend to highlight the pros and cons of various treatments. And hopefully, as people get that information, as doctors get that information, they'll be less inclined to do what we deem to be unnecessary procedures.
What are your concerns or positives on the Obamacare and its impact on vascular surgery, if any?
That's a very interesting question. The Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, or the Obamacare as it's called, has laudable goals. It wants to extend health care insurance coverage, and it wants to decrease costs. So the goals of the bill, and there are many other good goals that it has, are excellent. However, hidden within the more than 2,400 pages of this ridiculous bill are all sorts of intended and unintended bad consequences. And I could talk for an hour on what some of these are. I don't even know what some of them are because the bill is so complex and so long that we're not going to know its damaging effect. But it's clearly going to hurt our economy. It's going to raise taxes. It's going to increase costs. It has to. So that it'll damage our overall U.S. economy, but specifically it's going to damage medicine. There are a variety of bad elements within the bill. Can't talk about them all, But, I mean, one of them is this ridiculous commission of 15 bureaucrats, not necessarily doctors, who are going to make judgments about who should be treated and who shouldn't be treated. That's a terrible thing. Then there are the increased taxes that are going to be levied on healthcare industries, that is the device industry and the pharmaceutical industry. And that will impact negatively on the ability of these companies to do research, to improve their products, et cetera, et cetera. It will cut down on available funding for continuing medical education. It has a lot of secondary bad effects, and it's going to impact very negatively on the relationship between doctors and industry. There are elements in the healthcare bill, the Sunshine Act, which want to separate doctors from industry entirely. Now, there have been some flagrant abuses where doctors have received a lot of money for fraudulently promoting a particular item, but they're unusual, and you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You can limit those abuses without completely severing the relationship between doctors and industry, which will have enormous detrimental effects on medicine, on society, and yet that's part of the bill. So the bill is just loaded, larded is even a better word, with these bad things that are going to be harmful to our economy, to medicine, to doctors, et cetera. And even though its goals are laudable, it's not the way to get there, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely we could talk about that for a good long time, for sure. Now, your final concluding comments about its negative effects on the medical device industry.
Well, I already mentioned some of them, but the most onerous, I believe, is the thrust to separate doctors from industry. It's a natural relationship. It's like separating lawyers from judges or pilots from aircraft manufacturers. If we're not allowed to work with industry, there'll never be development of new devices and new drugs. And yet this bill, the Sunshine Act, has as a primary goal making it difficult for industry to work with doctors. And that's just absurd. And that's just one negative that the bill has. It's really loaded with them. I mean, and another one which I'm just thinking about is they want to increase the number of primary care physicians, which is a good thing, probably. But they want to do that by increasing reimbursement for primary care physicians and taking it away from specialists. Well, the actual fact of the matter is primary care physicians are helpful. They're good, but they really don't get patients well. The guys that take the risks and do the procedures that get patients well when they have a significant detrimental disease are the specialists. So to harm them, to increase the primary care physicians, to me seems another unwise element, and one that probably shouldn't have occurred but is occurring. And if we don't have specialty doctors, we're going to be back in the Middle Ages, you know, applying leeches and witchcraft to get patients well, rather than some of the brilliant specialty techniques that really can save lives and alleviate suffering.
Well, tell us where our listeners can get more information online about the Beef Symposium event in November.
Our meeting, one can go to www.beefsymposium.org. So it's beefsymposium.org, and that website includes the faculty, the program, and some background information as to what the talks will be, and also how to get access to our last year's program and how to get access to this year's program in the online version.
It has been certainly a privilege and tremendous to catch up with you. We've been talking with Dr. Frank J. Veith, Professor of Surgery, and the William J. Von Liebig Chair in Vascular Surgery at the Cleveland Clinic and Professor of Surgery at New York University Medical Center. And the website of reference, once again, veithsymposium.org. Dr. Veith, certainly thank you so much for joining us today on eHealth Radio.
It's been a pleasure, Eric. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And this has been Eric Michaels, and you've been listening to eHealth Radio in the Vascular Disease Information Channel, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. And we do thank you for listening. And until next time, enjoy.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.